if you are going to be either streaming it, hopefully you're already on. If you're going to be looking at the video, look at above the notes. I did put on PDF files on our website, so you can download those and have something to take notes for yourself as we're going through. So it's www.gracebibleny.org/Saturday-seminars. That lists the seminars we're going to be doing this year and next year. And then under single scene, there is a link that will take you to get the PDF, so you'll have the notes in front of you. Okay? So you can do that, and we'll get started. Good morning, Melissa. Okay. Okay, I have way too much material to do in the time allotted to us. So some of this I'm going to go fairly fast through if it is an area of particular interest to you. Slow me down and we'll spend some time with it. My goal is to help you with whatever you're thinking through yourself. We're going to be covering several issues. First, it's going to be friendship. Second, it's going to be basics of contentment. Then we're going to be talking about the advantages of singleness. And then a lot of times it's like, there is no advantage to being single. I feel terrible. There's advantages to being single. So we're going to go over that. And then we're going to talk about dating versus courtship. And demonstrate why courtship, not the druggers variety, but a biblical idea, is a better way than dating. So we'll get to that at the end. We'll take some breaks between the sessions so you can stretch your legs. If you're falling asleep, you can get some sugar and pump yourself up for a few minutes. Hopefully you won't need that. Okay, I know there's a couple other people coming, but we're going to go ahead and get started. All right, we're going to start with levels of friendship. The goal really simply is we should have reasonable expectations. And a lot of times I find people, probably more so singles than married folks, but singles are looking for a best friend. And then somebody else is the best friend. And then there's this contention, and there's all sorts of drama about, but I thought you were my, was it BFF, right? You were my BFF. But now so-and-so is your BFF, and I feel terrible. Well, let's talk about levels of friendship, because there should be proper expectations. The capacity of friendship is going to vary from person to person. Some people can handle a lot of relationships. Some can only handle a few. It's just your own personality. And then people can move up and down the scale of depth of friendship depending on circumstances and what's going on in your life and proximity. There are people that you may have known for many years. You don't see them anymore because you don't live in the same place. You see them and immediately you're just as close as ever has been. There's other people you were close to and they live next door and you're no longer close to them for various reasons. So you can go up and down these scales. First of all, when we look through scriptures, we find there are the multitudes, all those folks out there, people you know, your life intersects with them at various points. Jesus ministered to the multitudes. So that's all those crowds of people. And we interact as well. But there's really not a personal relationship with them. These would be characteristics. These are all the people you haven't met yet. They would be the multitudes. There may be some people you might recognize them, but you don't know anything about them. You don't even know their name, but I think I've seen you before. And if there's a communication there, it's going to be very surface level. Examples, those you encounter at a checkout, if you're going through a 7-Eleven while you're traveling. There's not really an in-depth conversation with the person there, unless, of course, you're in the South, in which case you're going to have a wonderful conversation as you're checking out a different culture. Capacity of this, hundreds to thousands per year of people you meet. So, and that's fine. Then there's people who are acquaintances. These are people you know slightly. And in the multitudes, there are people who became acquaintances. He became a little more familiar with them, a little more of a personal relationship, especially as he was ministering to particular needs. Certainly those he healed or cast demons out of became acquaintances. There's more knowledge both ways. Characteristics, you learn something about them, you might you know their name, you might know a few basic items of personal information about them. You might be able to ask appropriate questions reflecting an interest in their lives and then to you. But the communication still is more surface level. You're not bearing your heart to acquaintances. You might ask a question that's going to be about what's your thought, what's your opinion about something. And these would be the people you encounter at stores on a regular basis. You keep going to the same store, you keep seeing the same person, and you can develop a bit of an acquaintance there. Or people you maybe only met them once, but you actually were able to have a good conversation with them. You start to get to know them a little bit. Sometimes that's easier on vacation. You have a little more time and talk with them. So we're in New York, and we tend to rush through life. So it's even more surface. Capacity, hundreds per year to those who are gregarious and have good memories. I remember your name. I remember meeting you before. If you're like me, it's, I know I've seen you. I know you told me my name. I have no idea what it is. Sometimes I wear a name tag just so I know who I am. So again, it's your capacity. Then there's casual friends. These are people you know better than acquaintance, and you have more frequent contact with them. For example, Jesus would know the people in Nazareth. He grew up with them. He knows them. He knows their names. He knows their families. He has a casual relationship with them. He would have known a lot of people in the region of Galilee. He lived in Capernaum, so he'd know those folks around in that area. People such as Jairus or Nicodemus, who he had a little more interaction with, they would fit that category. The 70 disciples he sent out, they would be casual friends. So you know more about them, more specific personal information. You might even be getting to sense some of their strong points, their weak points. You might even know their hopes and desires. You've had some conversations with them. It's a little more intimate, a little more understanding what's going on. Communication still usually at the intellectual level, but you're going to start having some emotional connection as well. Those would be casual friends. Co-workers, your neighbors, people in your social groups, classmates, those all become casual friends. If you have clients who keep coming back, first time is there are just a multitude of people coming in, and then they're acquaintance, and then, I know you, and I know you're back, and I know exactly what I need to do today. When you first see them, right?
Yeah.
All right, so, and while you're there, you're talking, you get to know a little bit about them. Casual people. Capacity there, depending again on your own individual characteristics, 20 to 100, somewhere in that level. Again, depending on how active you are with them. But you can see we're narrowing it down. I know something about them, but they're going to be going back and forth to acquaintance casual friends if I'm not interacting with them on a regular basis. All right, the next level would be close friends. These are those you have a close association with. You see them usually on a fairly regular basis, or you talk with them. Folks in your Bible study, your small groups, if you have a special interest, a hobby. These are people you become very close to. And it's something that ends up being maintained by mutual choice. You both want the friendship. If one doesn't, one may feel close, but the other one, your casual relationship to them. It doesn't have to exist on the same level. We'll talk about that more in a little bit. Mentoring relationships are certainly in this. When someone is training you, teaching you, whoever might disciple you in something, that is a close relationship. And Jesus had close relationships with a lot of folks. His family, his community, we can see that Lazarus and his sisters, he has a close relationship with them. He has a mentoring relationship with 12 apostles. So now these are people you know specific information. You probably know their hopes, their dreams, what they're interested in, what they like, what they don't like. You probably have talked about their struggles, their weaknesses. You have a lot more emotional connection with them. They are a close relationship. Capacity, 10 to 30. Some people can handle more. Some can't. I can't. That gets a little overwhelming for me. But that's me. But again, this is one of those, sometimes you have had a very close relationship, you may not have seen them, but you see them again, and it picks right up where it was. So if they were close, you continue that. So, old friends, people you talk with, so we're moving down. And then there's intimate friends, or best friends. Some people have a capacity of one. That's usually not good, because then they're jealous of anybody else who may be getting close to it. But most people, 1 to 6, the average being around 4, you can have very close best friends. These are people that know you intimately. They know your thoughts, your dreams, your hopes, your desires, your strengths, your weaknesses. and they still accept you, even knowing all those things. Jesus had the 12. These would be intimate relationships. And certainly among the 12, some were even closer. Look at Peter, James, and John, that inner circle among the 12. Even closer with them. He revealed to them at the Transfiguration who he really is. So there are levels even within this. These are the people that you want with you if you're going through troubles or trials and sorrow. These are the people you will reach out to and definitely be there if they're going through something, because there's a commitment to each other in an intimate friendship. So certainly a spouse should be that if you get married, but you should have other best friends as well. I've always encouraged Diane to have close intimate friends with women. As a man, I can't handle all her needs. I don't even understand them. I've learned to talk to women. Some. Not a lot, but a little bit. I can figure her out. But she needs a woman in her life. She needs best friends. And the same thing for guys. Now, it's interesting. Why is it that it's all women here? Where are the guys? This is not good. The guys need this too. Because the guys need close friends. And sometimes guys don't recognize that. We also need best friends, people we can talk things over, people we can struggle with, we can go through it with them. Okay, we got one, but he's not single.
No, I'm not single.
No, you're not single. No. So you're bringing...
Kelly's coming.
Okay, any of the students coming?
No.
No.
They...
Okay, well...
That's right.
We'll give them the video address and they can...
Yes, definitely.
Thank you. So we're just going to go over the levels of friendship. So intimate friendships. Strange but true, the current generation, we have so many vehicles, so many different ways we can communicate with each other now. Even over long distances, you can, you know, Skype or FaceTime. Is that one of those? You do it over your phone. So anywhere you can actually see the person too. Lots of ways to communicate. And yet, study after study keeps showing that the current generation, the Facebook generation, has less relationships than previous generations. They have many casual relationships, acquaintances, but when it comes to close friends and best friends, intimate friends, it diminishes very rapidly. They don't have people in their lives they really can open up with, that they can really know that this person will be there for me. Part of that is because usually the level of communication on Facebook is shallow. And second is the depth of friendship is developed by going through experiences with each other. That's when you get very close. It's when you go through things together. When you don't understand it. It's one reason why I know veterans who've gone through war together, they are very close years afterward. I'll give you an example of this. I remember as a kid when we were traveling, we'd stop in certain places, and my dad would go to talk to somebody. Well, it was a guy from his unit in World War II, and he wanted to see the guy. So sometimes we'd stop in Mesquite, and my mom would try to find something to do with us kids while my dad was inside catching this buddy. My dad turned 90. He had these little thumbnail prints from the war, and a lot of it were his unit and people in it. And it was harder for him to see those things. So we scanned those, put them on a huge screen. Now he can see these guys. So 90's years old, so that's going back to when he was 21, 22, 23. All the way back there, he's identifying each of these guys by names. He tells you where they're from, what their interests were, what kind of things that they ended up doing after the war because he kept up with them. The experience of war made a huge impact on him and the friendships he had. And he didn't keep, you know, constant communication. He didn't have Facebook back then. But when he saw them, it was immediate. So experience has a lot to do with how deep we can become in a friendship. We go through life together. That's part of the reason I think it's a struggle for the current generation. If I put this on PowerPoint, I'm going to get a picture of a cartoon, except now you get a picture of it. You can go almost anywhere, go into any... places they have Wi-Fi, and you'll see two people sitting at a table texting, sometimes to each other. I didn't believe that was true, but it's report after report is yes. They're texting each other when they're sitting across the table from each other. You've got to be kidding. But that is a detriment in where people are in developing relationships. Now, why go over all this? Because there is dangers for us in developing friendships. I already mentioned one of those. We have a best friend, and someone else wants to be their best friend, and we get jealous. That's not good. You can have more than one best friend, and so can other people that need that. We can also have friendships that remain casual, and that's okay. They can move up and down the scale. But have your expectations as realistic, okay? To be a friend, to have to be, really be a friend. If you want those kinds of relationships, there's a commitment on your part as well, okay? Don't feel bad if your capacity is not great, but certainly seek to fill up your capacity with people who can help you. Certainly in the church, that's necessary. That's where the one another's come in. That's where we minister to each other. That's how we help each other. That's how God uses us in each other's lives. Okay? On every kind of level. Now, there are also dangers in friendship that go to two extremes. One is isolation. And a lot of people isolate themselves for many different reasons. It's the condition of having few or no close friends or intimate friends. And there are reasons that people isolate themselves. I'm sure there's people who should be here, but they've isolated themselves. Why? There's a lot of reasons. Now, there are some legitimate reasons. For example, you should isolate yourself to communicate with God in Christ. You're not distracted. In fact, Jesus had the habit of getting up early in the morning. He isolated himself from all his disciples, and he spent time in communion with God. That's fine, but notice it's temporary. It's only a brief time. If you have a contagious disease, please isolate yourself, okay? Don't spread that around to everybody. That would be appreciated. In fact, the Mosaic Law even required isolation for certain diseases in Leviticus 13. You may want to isolate yourself if you're upset and can't handle your emotions so that you don't spill your anger over on everybody and damage all sorts of things. Proverbs 29:22 warns this, an angry man stirs up strife and a hot-tempered man abounds in transgression. But after you've taken some time to calm down, a few minutes, maybe some hours, if you're really upset, then we start dealing with it. Ephesians tells us to deal with our issues quickly. In fact, be angry, yet do not sin. Do not let the sun go down in your anger. So it's not something that you should let fester. That causes all sorts of other problems and gives the devil an opportunity. But in general, it's foolish to isolate yourselves from others. Proverbs 18:1 states, he who separates himself seeks his own desire. He quarrels against all sound wisdom. Now notice the emphasis. It's an isolation that rises out of seeking your own desires that is in conflict with sound wisdom. So the motivation to separate is selfish, whether it's self-protection, expediency, or just plain pride. Keep in mind that isolation can be either physical or emotional. You may have felt this. You can be in a crowd and you feel lonely. I remember sitting in, even in a church. This held 3,000 people. It was full. And I felt very, very lonely. But that was my fault. It wasn't the fault of people around me. That was me. But I had isolated myself emotionally. So I really didn't have the friends I should have already developed. Okay, I'll, a little bit more about that later. There are people who put on a mask, a facade. They pretend to be something they're not because they're not willing to have someone really know how ugly they really are, how simple they are, because they feel like they're going to get rejected and I can't handle that. So, surface relationships, facade, and you don't really grow. That's not wise. But all of us are capable of that one way or another. Present ourselves as something or not, not really deal with the issues. What are common reasons for isolation? Well, one is pain. Probably the most common reason. It's the self-protection. And that can go from just not letting someone really know what's going on because you just don't want to deal with it, all the way to agoraphobia. I can't even get out of a house. I am so afraid of people. And it is a progression downward toward that. You start with isolating yourself from some people, then it just gets worse and worse and worse. I don't want to risk getting hurt. It's sad when a person remains single out of fear of being hurt again in a romantic relationship, and yet that's very common. You get hurt, I don't want to try this again. I'm not willing to risk the pain I just went through. But that quarrels, again, as Scripture says, with sound wisdom. God's design within even the church is for you to function in relationship with other people. And in doing that, they are going to help you grow and mature and become more like Christ. That becomes our goal as Christians. Every single person is a member of the body of Christ. If you're a Christian, you're part of that body, and God has gifted you and equipped you to be able to serve Him, and that means in serving other people. That means you can't isolate yourself. It also means you're going to put yourself at risk, and I guarantee you will get hurt. Pain is going to be part of it because people are going to let you down. But this is where a relationship with God comes in. The pain I can bring to Christ, and that's where it's going to get solved. I also have other friends who will help me endure because they're going to help comfort me in the midst of pain. The pain is not a good reason to isolate yourself, though it's the most common one. Now, we certainly understand that, but again, that kind of isolation blocks the maturity that we needed. I like going to James chapter 1, verses 2 through 4, and Romans 5, it's verses 3 through 11. Those passages tell us that it is the troubles and trials of life that God uses in our lives to bring us to maturity. So, I don't want to go as far and say, embrace the pain, you know, like a guy at a gym or something. Embrace that pain, no gain. Well, no, I'm not going to go that far. But don't be afraid of the pain. In the midst of the pain, you will see God changing you, maturing you, making you something you were not before, more like Christ.
What were those verses again?
James chapter 1, verses 2 through 4, and Romans 5, I believe it's 3 through 11. Count it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials. Because these things, you go through some steps, but they're going to move you to maturity. And frankly, I think that's when we grow the most. Because that's when it's forced upon us. We don't sometimes really have a choice. We have to work through it. Or we end up isolating ourselves and going down the road of complete isolation. But again, friends, understand, are going to let you down. You are going to let people down. Proverbs 26 even asks rhetorically, many a man proclaims his own loyalty, but who can find a trustworthy man? So when you find someone who's trustworthy, hold on to them. Okay? And you determine to be that kind of person, someone that's loyal and trustworthy. So fear of suffering, of pain, they're not to control us. Because God's plan is for us to deal with those things. How? Well, first of all, we can cast all of our cares upon Him. He cares for us, 1 Peter 5:7. We find peace in laying our petitions at His feet and leaving those things in His hands. That's what Philippians 4:6-7 tells us to do. Don't be anxious, but by everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be known to God. And then the peace of God, which is beyond comprehension or surpasses all understanding, shall control your mind. That's what I need to do with it. And therefore, then I grow into maturity, as already mentioned. So, yeah, we're cautious of putting ourselves in a position where we get pain, because we're not masochists, okay? We're not looking to get it, but we know it's going to come. We're not going to be fearful of it. That's the difference. Don't want to disengage just because it's painful. We want to work through it, and hopefully in the midst of that, we'll help the other person who's causing the pain work through it as well. Frankly, it comes down to an issue of, am I learning to trust God in the midst of the situations of life, whatever they are? And in friendships, there's wonderful aspects of friendship, but there's going to be pain too. Don't let the pain limit you from developing friendships. Continue on with that. Expediency is another one. People isolate themselves with this. It's not an uncommon reason, but it's a very poor reason. And what I'm referring to this is I'm placing my own wisdom in pursuing my own plans above God's wisdom and His commands. So I think I know best, so I'm going to do it my way. And so an expedience, no, I'm not going to bother. I don't have time for it. I don't have enough interest. I'm not thinking through what God really wants me to do. A story on myself, I graduated from college. I was looking to go to seminary. I decided which one I wanted to go. I was going to spend a year earning enough money, living at home, because my parents weren't going to charge me, which is really nice. I could save them some money. And once I had enough money, I was going to head off to seminary. Meanwhile, I was taking Greek at a local Bible institute, and great. But I was going to limit myself in how many friendships I developed, because I'm only going to be here a year. Why pour the time and energy into all that? And there was a guy at church, and he was trying to get to know me. He kept asking me to come over for dinner. And I always found an excuse. Finally, he cornered me and just says, "Something's wrong with you." He said, "Why is it you seem to isolate yourself? What?" I mean, it was also like, "Is there something wrong with me?" I said, no, there's nothing wrong with you. He says, "Well, why don't you come over? I'd like to get to know you better." And I explained to him, "Well, I'm not going to be here." And he looked at me and said, "Like, how do you know that?" "Well, because that's my plan." "Well, you don't know that. The mind of a man plans his way, but who directs his steps?" "The Lord directs his steps." I was there for 10 more years. I took his advice, went and had dinner with him. We became good friends. And I developed a lot of friends because I took his advice. I needed that rebuke. Expediency, that was my stupidity. It's foolishness. I don't know what God has in store, so I need to be taking advantage of what opportunities he gives me to allow other people to help me become more mature and for me to help them become mature, because that's what the body of Christ is about. Because you don't know what tomorrow brings, do you? And anything can change. You may be planning to go, and you're still here. You may be planning to stay, and you go. Take advantage of what opportunities you have while you have them. Okay, the last reason that people tend to isolate themselves is pride, but that causes all sorts of problems. Proverbs 16:18 warns, "Pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before stumbling." That destruction comes from both the natural consequences generated by pride, but also because God is going to oppose them. A lot of scriptures warn that. Proverbs 16:5, "Everyone who is proud in heart is an abomination to the Lord. Assuredly, he will not be unpunished." James 4:6 states it directly. God is opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble. So humility is a key characteristic of a good friend. Pride destroys friendships. The proud do not want to be friends with those who they consider beneath them, whatever that is. It could be wealth, social class, intellectual ability, combination of all those things. But such pride foolishly cuts people off from one another. It is an argument against sound wisdom. It's not humble. Proverbs 11:12 warns, "When pride comes, then dishonor, but with the humble is wisdom." Pride exists in every wealth class, social strata, and educational level. You can see it from those who are on the top of the levels, who I won't associate with the bottom, and you go find it with those on the bottom level, it's like, I won't associate with those people, referring to those who are more intellectual, higher social class, have more wealth, don't want anything to do with them. They're proud in whatever their state is. This is foolishness. Godly wisdom exists in people of every class, every social strata, every economic strata. There's wisdom there because of God. Because that's where wisdom comes from. You often find that it's people you didn't think you'd gain a lot from as you gain the most. Because God has given them wisdom. A healthy local church reflects the diversity within the community it serves. Within the church, then, there are friendships developing among this mix of humble people. A pride causes the pool of friendships also become narrow and focused until it is small. And I think that's sad, that their pride will not allow them a breadth of friendship that would enable them to be more mature, and instead they have fewer friends, and as they get older, it's fewer and fewer and fewer who meet whatever their standards are, until they die as lonely old people. That's very sad. I find it sad when you go into nursing homes, and it's full of people with no friends. Now, it's bad enough that they may be the last sleep on the tree and all their friends have died off. It's even worse when you consider they're in a place with a lot of people in their age group who have common experiences, and they still isolate themselves from them and don't make friends where they are. I'll give Mary lately a shout out here. She was in one of those facilities. She didn't like being there, but that's where she was. She said, "Okay, then, Lord, what should I do?" So she decided she'd find the most miserable people and befriend them. She would purposely sit next to people who were grumblers and complainers in order to see if God could use them in their lives. And she was used. She had people who were miserable who became more and more like, I don't understand how you do this, Mary. And they became more and more friendly and eventually started doing the same thing Mary did. In fact, now here's a weird one. Here, she would have been 91, 92. Apparently, they offered her a job. Would you continue to stay here and we'll pay you to do what you're doing? See the difference? She wasn't afraid. She decided, I will be used of God no matter what it is. Isolation, not having truly good friends, is against all sound wisdom. Pursuit born out of selfishness, it's contentious against God's commands and plans. So the solution to isolation, trusting God to overcome the fear of pain, make the most of your time to be used by God in the lives of other people, be humble to develop friendships with anyone that God places in your path, because you don't know where it's going to go. You don't know what it's going to lead to. Now, that's one danger, this isolation. The other danger, I think, may be more realistic among the Facebook generation. That's inundation. You are overwhelmed with people, so much so that you can't really develop good friends. And this is what seems to be happening with the social networking idea. You're flooded with lots and lots of the multitude, the acquaintances, maybe even some casual friends. You have no time left to develop close friends or intimate friends. Now think about that. I don't have a smartphone. Praise God. I don't want something in my pocket smarter than me. So I don't have one of those things. How often it is friends are out and they're talking to someone and then it's pulled up and then back and forth or, oh, excuse me. What are you saying to the person you're talking to live?
You're not important.
You're not important. Well, after that goes on for a while, how do you respond to that? I recognize I'm not important. I'll get your attention. Here, let me text you. Hence, two people at a table texting each other because they can't talk. Communication drops out and there's no close friendship. So yeah, turn off the social media. It's a good practice once in a while, even if you use it for good things, and it's possible to do that. Turn it off sometimes and develop real relationships. It is wonderful to go someplace where there's no cell phone reception. It is a beautiful thing. Okay, you actually end up talking. Now this has just gotten worse. I remember years ago, someone brought it up. I was preaching a sermon about, and it had the dangers of television, and you're always just focused on entertainment. You're not even talking with your family. So I challenge people to turn the TV off for a week. And a lot of people in the church did take up that challenge. And by Wednesday night, at prayer meeting, they were complaining. They said, this is driving me nuts. I can't stand it. We're just sitting there all agitated. Wow, it's only Wednesday? Your family's at each other's throats because you can't watch TV? And then Sunday came and they said, you know what? Something happened by Thursday. We started talking with each other. We sat down, we played a game with each other. It was great. But they went back to watching TV the next week. I gave them a chance. Don't be inundated to the point you can't develop the real relationships that are needed. We need those close and intimate friendships. We develop friendships by, yes, it's surface knowledge, casual things, but we want to keep working that down with the better friends to know what they're thinking, why they think that way, and then what they feel about things, what they struggle with. You let them inside you with your struggles, and they let you inside theirs. And because you're loyal, it builds a depth of friendship, because you're working with each other to help each other become all that God wants you to be. So inundation is another one. Proverbs 18:24 gives a warning. The Hebrew is a little difficult here. But the NISB translates this way. A man of many friends comes to ruin, but there's a friend who sticks closer than a brother. So the sense is a man of many friends is going to get himself broken because he's overwhelmed. But this loving friend that sticks closer to a brother is the one who's going to actually help you. So there is a priority we give to our best friends. We're certainly open to developing more friendships, but there's a priority there. Proverbs 29:19 also gives us some warning about making sure that those who are your close friends are actually friends. Be careful of those who are gossips and talebearers. It says, he who goes about as a slander reveals secrets, therefore do not associate with a gossip. Proverbs 11:13 points out this characteristic of a friend as opposed to a gossip. He who goes about as a talebearer reveals secrets, but he who is trustworthy conceals a matter. It's one of those things that we are always checking people with is, can I trust you? If you find out from other people, they're blabbing what you shared as a confidence, you're not going to be sharing with them again. At least you need to confront them before you ever share anything again, and you're going to be testing them. For the Facebook generation, remember that whatever you post
is posted.
I'm amazed how many people use Facebook or other social media as their diary. Remember, diaries where you spill your guts onto something that's confidential, but they use it and they post it for the world to see. Then they get upset if you ask them about it. Be careful where you spill who you are. Reveal. That's for your close friends. That's for your intimate friends. They're the ones you can trust who are going to hold it. Otherwise, what ends up happening, you get hurt, and now what road are you going to start upon? Isolation. Well, I'm not telling anybody anything. I'm not going to share myself. Or you create a false perception of yourself, something that actually isn't even true. So don't isolate yourself. Don't inundate yourself. Seek to develop true friends you can trust, and especially with the one friend you can always trust, and that's Christ. He's the one who sticks closer than brother. He is the best friend. He is completely trustworthy. So we want to make sure we're developing that relationship as well. So how do we develop friends? How do we do this? What kinds of characteristics are we looking for? Look over at Psalm 1. And we find here some good characteristics that help us. We'll begin here because it talks about the blessed man, but it's interesting how the psalm is put together. What influences people and what happens to them in life and where the end is. How blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the wicked, nor stand in the path of sinners, nor sit in the seat of scoffers. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law he meditates day and night. He will be like a tree firmly planted by streams of water, which yields its fruit in season. Its leaf does not wither, and whatever he does, he prospers. The wicked are not so. They are like chaff which the wind drives away. Therefore the wicked will not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the assembly of the righteous, for the Lord knows the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked will perish. Now he starts with a negative to express the blessing, which is a little interesting. How blessed the man who does not do these things. And that gives us a good indication here that to be blessed takes more than just being friends with good people. It means avoiding ungodly influences. Otherwise, you will start on a path down with them. So the principle here is very important. The people you spend your time with, the people you become close friends with, the people who become your confidants, those who are going to be, you're seeking to get advice from, they're the ones who are going to influence you in a direction. What direction will that be? So you're going to need to have good, close friends who are godly, but you have to be very wary of those who are ungodly. If you start taking in their counsel, there is a decline here. It's a progression of influence. Sinners become your close friends, and so you start hearing their advice, you start thinking, yeah, maybe. And then next thing you know, you're repeating their advice. And then you're defending them. Well, my friend said that, it's okay, it's a good position. And then you're teaching the same thing. You're advocating what they advocate, and it's wicked. Because the friendship is determining what truth is for you rather than actually what God says. So we need to be careful with our friends. Peer pressure can be very strong. Now, it's impossible in this society not to hear the counsel of the wicked. It's everywhere. If you turn on the radio, it is going to be on talk radio. It's going to be in the songs that are sung. All the songs are just plain, ugly, evil advocation of wickedness. So you're going to hear all that in schools. You're going. Are you still going to Duchess? No, not this year. Okay, but you've gone. You did not come to Duchess. I know you went, and then you went to a lot more school. So what's it like on a college campus? What kind of advice do you get from the teachers? Bad advice, especially in social problems, right?
Yeah.
It's absolutely wicked, right?
Yeah.
So the educational institutions, they're going down this way. You go into a museum, and they're going to advocate things that aren't true. It doesn't matter where you go. You're not going to avoid hearing it, but you have to heed it. So that's the issue. How blessed a man who does not walk in the counsel of the ungodly. Don't heed that kind of advice. You may hear it. You're going to hear it. You have to work through it. Don't heed it. Recognize it for what it is. Don't let the wicked be your close and best friends. The issue here is one of this. We want to be those who influence people, not those who are being influenced by the wicked. We're going to have friendships with those who are wicked. We actually should seek that out. But it's going to be down at the levels of acquaintance or casual, not close and intimate. Why? Because friendships can exist at the different levels with the same people. One person can consider you their best friend, and you consider them a casual acquaintance. Why? Because they see loyalty and they think you're great. So they always want to be around you. You recognize that they're dangerous because they don't know Christ or they are not walking with Christ. And so you're not revealing yourself to them and where you struggle. They're not trustworthy of it. But they're doing that with you. So it's a different level. Every mentor relationship has that issue. The mentor is always considered a closer friend by the student than the other way around. You have that a lot with the students that are always coming to you, Lance. You are mentoring them. You seek to influence them. It's not to be going the other direction. So that's what we want to do as Christians, developing friendships so that we can influence people. We purposely go out of our way to develop a friendship, to influence them towards Christ. King Solomon's life is a good example of the problem of when you start letting them influence you. Scripture had warned him, he was supposed to have, from Deuteronomy 17, written down the law himself, and heeded the warning for kings of not to multiply wealth, or horses, war, or women. But what did he multiply? All of it. And with the women, it wasn't godly women. Started off with political alliances to pagans, and then he had more and more and more. And then in 1 Kings 11, 1 through 8, recounts that he turned away from God because he loved many foreign women. He developed relationships, and he let them sway him until he went through a period where it was bad. It says, when Solomon was old, his wives turned his heart after other gods. And he did evil was inside the Lord. So we need to be careful here. That's the point. Be close. So simply stated, it becomes this. You will become like those you hang around with. So be careful who is influencing you. So, very briefly, what are some of the characteristics of people we should avoid? Well, sinners. Proverbs 1, 8 through 19. You can read through that passage on your own, but it describes what happens when you become friends with sinners. And when I'm saying friends here, I am talking about the close friends, the intimate friends, those who are influencing you. Certainly you want to have friends who are sinners. Jesus was a friend of sinners, but he was influencing them. You want to do that. The sinner may gain a life of ease and luxury for a short term. Asaph observed this in Psalm 73, but it's going to decline. You don't want to be part of that. The wealth of the sinner is stored up for the righteous, and adversity pursues the sinner. So you don't want to suffer the consequences with them. They will drag you with them. So if they're characterized by this, they're not your close friends, your intimate friends. Those who are wicked and evil, Proverbs 4, 14 through 19. That whole section there is turn away from people who are marked by these characteristics. Do not enter the path of the wicked. Do not perceive the way of the evil men. Avoid it. Do not pass by it. Turn away from it. Pass on. So, If they want to do things that are wicked, you leave. If that's continuing what they're doing, you develop other friends. Casual acquaintance, you invite them to church, you invite them, you know, I'm happy to talk to you about Christ, but they want to do wicked stuff, I'm not part of that. You turn away from them. Proverbs 6:12-15 gives even more of a warning. A worthless person, a wicked man, is the one who walks with a false mouth, winks with his eyes, who singles with his feet, who points with his fingers, with perversity in his heart, and devises evil continually, who spreads strife. Therefore, his calamity will come suddenly, instantly he'll be broken, and there'll be no healing. So, you avoid them. Because frankly, unless the wicked person repents, they're doomed. We warn them of the destruction that's coming. But the curse of the Lord is upon the house of the wicked. In fact, Proverbs 10:17 concludes, the name of the wicked will rot. You don't need part of that. Proverbs 5, 6, and 7 has a lot of warnings about the immoral woman. Being very careful. It's a very strong section, for especially for the guys, because their eyes will lead them astray. The gals, you need to be careful of evil men, too, because they will lead you astray. Be careful of those who are following our society's bent toward they think it's all about sex. It's not. That's not what life is about. It almost seems heretical in the society now, but that's not what life is about. Period. Society is bent that way. So be very careful of that. Don't let your heart be turned aside because of the guy's handsome or the gal's cute, either way. Proverbs 14:7 warns about the fool. This is the person, particular word here is sel or seal. It means someone who's dull, obstinate, with a proclivity to make wrong choices because they do not like knowledge and go against what they know is should be right to do. This is the fool, the true fool. Proverbs 14:7 warns, leave the presence of a fool or you will not discern words of knowledge. So again, you see how it ties back together. If you are influenced by fools, you will become a fool. You will start listening to counsel. You don't want to do that. You want to be the wise one who is influencing the fool. Proverbs 22:24-25 warns about the hot-tempered man. Do not associate with a man given to anger or go with a hot-tempered man, lest you learn his ways and find a snare for yourself. So those are characteristics of those who are proud and lack self-control. They don't get what they want, so they explode in a rage. You want to keep your distance from such people. Okay, when they're calm, you can befriend them and try and help them learn. Give them a lot of ideas and suggestions of how they can start dealing with that, and it's going to be Christ, ultimately. But if you're hanging around with them all the time, you get pulled into it. I can certainly recall times in my life, because someone else is upset, I get upset. Well, I'm upset about this too. The next thing you know, you're in a rage right alongside them. One reason I don't really like listening to talk radio so much, especially certain people, is all you do is you leave and like, I say, you get more and more upset and angry because they're angry. I don't need that in my life. I can approach all those issues with being calm. An angry man stirs up strife, a hot-tempered man abounds in transgression. Another one to avoid, we already mentioned it, the gossip, Proverbs 20:19. Don't associate with them. You can really, the word gossip actually comes, the word means whisperer. This is the person who says things behind your back. Whispering is because they don't want to say out loud. They don't really want you to know what they're saying. Well, let's face it. If someone is whispering to you, if someone is gossiping to you, guess what they're doing about you to other people? Guarantee it. Sometimes it's a little comical as you watch someone doing this. Because you're the third party and you see this one bad-mouthing and this one comes bad-mouth this person. They're both telling you. It's like, you two are supposed to be friends, are you? But they're not. Don't associate with such people. If they gossip about someone else to you, they will gossip about you to other people. And gossip stirs up all sorts of strife. It's generally slander. It's generally things that aren't true. Or it's meant to put the person in the most negative light. And even if it's true, what business it is of yours? Are you helping them overcome whatever their problem is? Or going the other direction, taking delight in it? The first man spreads strife, a slanderer separates intimate friends. We've seen that happen a lot, very much. And then Proverbs 26:20, for lack of wood, the fire goes out, and where there isn't a whisperer, contention quiets down. It's amazing what happens when those people finally leave. Because they're always behind the scenes spreading strife. Conclusion basically comes down to this. Be careful who your friends are from the negative influence. Avoid them. They only are allowed in the acquaintance or casual friend category, period. Never more than that. So who do you want as close friends and intimate friends, best friends? Well, godly friends, right? So you're looking for people with those characteristics because those become the kinds of things you want in your own life. When you see someone who has the characteristics you want in your life, befriend them. Worm your way into their life to learn from them. Never know where that will lead you. There was a reason that I was interested in Diane. I could see that she had a characteristic of befriending people and was serious about it. I still remember her sitting in one of the pews. It was a large church, and she's sitting there, and she's talking with a guy that I know was not easy to talk to. He was mentally off. It just was hard to communicate with him. And she's sitting in the pew and looking straight at him, asking him how he's doing. How is he really doing? And listening intently. I said, I can learn a lot from her. I think I'd like to have her as my friend. I can learn from that. And I have learned a lot. So when she says, how are you really doing, and looks you in the eye, she means it. It means you better sit down and spill the beans. Because she's going to find out. And she's going to start praying for you. And things change. So a godly friend is really what you're after more than anything else. In Philippians 2, Paul talks about a unified church and how it's going to be unified. Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, let each of you regard one another as more important than himself. Do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also the interests of others. That motivates us to move forward. I want to consider the other people around me, and I want to learn and help them, and I want them to help me. How far can that go? Well, what's the greatest indication of love? The man laid down his life for his friends. So we're going to pursue that kind of relationship with godly people to develop it in our own lives. So what kind of characteristics demonstrate that? Well, the first thing would be humility. You want friends who are humble. The opposite of pride, it's pride leads to all sorts of problems. Humility allows people in. Humble people are willing to listen to you. And even when you're saying things that aren't right, they're still willing to listen. And they are gentle when they correct. They're not proud and arrogant and trying to beat you down. They are willing to take the time with you because they consider you as important. Those are humble people. Those are characteristics. Humble people don't have to control the situation. Okay? Now, they may be able to control the situation, but they don't have to. If someone else is in charge or someone else is leading it, it's okay. They're simply looking, where does God use me? And so humility is huge. Humble people recognize they're simply a creature made by God that seeks to submit to and honor their Creator. That's a huge part of it. They think rightly about themselves, not over or under. They have a right assessment of what their abilities are and what they're not. And even where they're very good, they don't brag about it. They simply use their abilities. I'm going to pick on Lance on this one. Lance is a humble chef. He doesn't have to be. Okay, he's a good chef. But he's a humble chef. You talk with him, you immediately find out. He's very humble. He doesn't go around bragging about things that he's done. It's other people that brag on him. That's how you find out, because he's not going to say it. Other people do. That's the way it should be. Because it's not about us. Really, it's about how do I point praise to my Creator, to my God. That's who I want to give praise. These are the characteristics and friends that you want. They're pointing people to Christ all the time. They're pointing the glory to Christ, not trying to gain it for themselves. Those who are humble also are people at peace. They are comfortable with the idea that the mind of a man plans the way the Lord directs his steps. They'll yield to that because they trust God. They have peace because they do trust God. Thou will keep in perfect peace his mind is stayed on thee, because he trusts in thee. Humility is necessary for wisdom. A lot of Proverbs mention this. When pride comes, then comes dishonor, but the humble is wisdom. Proverbs 22:4 ties humility with the fear of the Lord, which is at the beginning of wisdom. The reward of the humility and the fear of the Lord are riches, honor, and life. And then Proverbs 15:33 links the two. The fear of the Lord is the instruction for wisdom, and before honor comes humility. Now, humility is also important in a friendship, because humility is what is the grease that allows the relationship to function without friction causing heat and fire and explosions. You need something to smooth it out. Humility is what does that. Humble people see other people as also created by God for God's glory and are interested in helping that to move forward. The unsaved are valued because they're created in God's image. They need to hear the gospel. Christians help one another to mature in godliness, accomplish God's will, and glorify him simply because I just want to use my gifts, whatever they are, to help you as God would allow me. That's it. I'm not after trying to get something else. They will be selfless, generous, loving, because there's something more important to themselves than personal power, glory, and comfort. Humble people are aware of their own sin, and therefore they're more forgiving than the proud. They recognize that. Proverbs 19:11 states, a man's discretion makes him slow to anger, and it is his glory to overlook a transgression. The opposite of that is a fool's vexation is known at once. Pretty different. Proverbs 6 gives a scenario of someone who becomes indebted to a neighbor, but the principle here in verse 3 goes before beyond monetary debt. Do this then, my son, deliver yourself, since you have come into the hand of your neighbor, go humble yourself, importune your neighbor. That's the characteristic of a humble man, because I recognize that if I am sinful, if I have done something wrong, I actually want the forgiveness. And I humble myself to go to the other person to seek that forgiveness. That's a characteristic of the humble. Those are the people you want as friends. When someone comes to ask you to forgive you, you know you've got a good clue here. This actually is a good friend. They just did you wrong and that hurt, but this person's actually humble. We can work out this relationship if they're going to do that. If they don't, you know this is not good. Love, another characteristic of a true friend. And by this, I'm not referring to fond feelings of affection. I'm referring to the kinds of friendship in which an agape love exists. I see you as creating God's image. I value you because you're created by God. And I'm willing to sacrifice myself for your best interest. That's true love. Friendship that have that as the base of love are far superior. So you want people who demonstrate that kind of love and develop that, because you know that's what's going to be extended to you. And you want to learn to extend that to other people. It is the friend who loves at all times. This is the brother who's born for adversity. That's the one that's going to be there. True friendship is not based on what you get, but really on what you give. And so in tough situations, the friend that loves you is the one who's going to be loyal, which is going to be the next characteristic. Who do you call at 2 a.m.? And you need someone to physically be there to help you. Your car is broken down and you don't know where else to go. Who will do that? Kelly will. Got that, everybody? Call Kelly. She'll help you out.
Let me write that down.
But that's a true friend. This is what the problem of the Facebook thing is. Who on Facebook are you going to call? Do you have enough close relationship? You're really in trouble. And then they'll come and help you. Now, that's just a tangible thing. But what about when it's 2 a.m. and you're crying because you're distraught over something? Who are you going to call? Do you have a friend that's close? That they know they can call you and it's okay? And they'll listen? Diane had a friend who lost a baby. And it seemed like for a while there was a fairly common at 1 or 2 a.m. Diane get a call. She listened. She prayed with her, comforted her. That's a true friend. That's what we want to be, and that's what we want in our friends. That kind of love and loyalty. Loyalty is a big part of it, because that love should spark that kind of loyalty. So you see a person who's loyal, that's the person you want to develop a friendship, because that's what you want to develop in your own life. And again, a basic principle, you're going to become like those you are close and best friends with. Learn from them and gain those same kind of characteristics. Develop the kind of friend that he got a call from somebody or she got a call from someone and you need to go someplace at 2 a.m. and they call you to go with them. And you say, I'll go with you because I'm your friend too. And you learn from that. Wow, that would really be striking it, huh? My friendship with this person is enough that I will go help them with some other friend. I will sacrifice myself. And then confidentiality, we talked about gossips. We don't want to be friends with gossips. We want someone who's going to keep our confidences. Let's face it, when you have a close friend, when you have an intimate friend, a best friend, those are people you share your heart with. You share the ugly things there. You share the things you struggle with. They need to keep it confidential. They share it with you so you can help them with it, not to blab it everywhere about how terrible you are and here's all your weaknesses that other people will exploit. They just use it against you. That's extremely important, a close friend. You be that way, and you make sure that that's the kind of friend you're developing yourself. A friend who holds a confidence, doesn't blab it out. Now, does that mean that to a friend you need to hide sin of other people so they don't get into trouble? Well, yes and no. They've sinned to something to the degree that you protect them from public shame, yeah, you hide that. To the degree that it keeps them from dealing with the issue, no. You're going to confront them on that. And that could even end up in a Matthew 18 thing and it becomes more serious. Our goal is to help people become like Christ. So they share in something confidence, you start working with them. Start helping them. This is what humble people do. Galatians 6:1 talks about that. But it's a confidentiality that is there. We're not blabbing it all over the place. We are going to help them with it now that we know to help them work through whatever it is. So a true friend will rebuke you. If they won't rebuke you, they're not a true friend. Because they don't really value what you're supposed to be. They're putting their weight on something else. Honesty, of course, is going to be related to that, and loyalty. You don't want to be among those who just flatter. Flattery is a dangerous thing. Flattery is setting you up to exploit you. You want people who are honest with you. And that includes the honesty of if you share something that's negative about yourself, they're going to be honest with you about, yeah, that's not good. This is wrong. This is what God says about it. How can then we work together to overcome it? That's honesty. An honest friend is also going to let you know when you hurt them. They're going to be honest about those things. You know, this is what bothered me. This is why it bothered me. I appreciate if you did do that. That's honesty. Because that develops a deeper relationship. If you're just surfacing over all that stuff all the time, the relationship isn't going to grow. The dishonesty there about what's really going on is they're going to start pulling away from you. Instead of deepening it, it becomes more shallow. Be an honest friend. And again, that gets into whatever you have to do in expressing that. There's actually a whole lot more I could go on this, but I've got other things that we're going to cover. So let me just summarize this whole thing about friends and friendship. There are levels of friendship. We want to be careful of those who are close or intimate friends. They are the ones who are going to influence you. Get yourself in a position where you can influence others who are your acquaintances, your casual friends, with your godliness. Do not let the ungodly become your influences. Make your best friends, your close friends, those who show godly characteristics, as we have described some of those. And there'll be a lot more, but the more godly they are, the better friend they're going to be. The less godly they are, well, they're not going to be as good of a friend, are they? We want to be careful, because our goal is to become like Christ. Friendships are the means by which God does that. It fits within the whole idea of what the body of Christ is. We are members of it. Each one of us is gifted differently to work together, to practice the one another commands, and there's a lot of them. gals in the ladies' Bible study, Diane went over that what, a couple months ago, the One Another Commands?
We're going through it now.
Oh, you're going through it now. Okay. Well, go to the Bible study. You can get all the One Another Commands. That's who practices it. It's these close friends. If you don't have the friends, you can't have that practice to you, and you can't practice that with other people. You can't obey the commands. You're in disobedience to God. It's also the close friends that are going to help you and comfort you and move you through so that everybody is maturing together. That's where the spiritual gifts come in and actually function. I'm gifted this way. You're my friend, so I have a means by which I can use it. If you isolate yourself, you can't use any of that. You can't obey the commandments. You can't use your spiritual gifts. Friendships are key. For singles, as we get later on some of this, the thing, even more important. Because the feelings of loneliness that come up because you're single, and we're going to talk about why some of that's accentuated in a society like ours or even in churches, it becomes can be overwhelming. But the closer you have of best friends, the more it's like, no, I'm not lonely. I've got plenty of friends. I've got people I can bear my heart to. I've got people that I know are loyal to me. And it certainly diminishes all of that. And you have the relationships that are going to help you grow. That's what it's all about. Okay? So friendship becomes the foundation for the other things we're going to talk about. Next is going to be learning contentment. We're going to take a 10-minute break.